Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Henkel. Excellence is our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 271 for January 9th of 2015. We built this ProMaster city. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Gary Vasilash.
John.
I remember you from 2014.
That's right. Here we are. New year.
Brand new time.
We're ready to go. You were in Las Vegas this week.
I was.
And we were here in Detroit freezing. I was thinking yesterday, there you are in Las Vegas. I'm at the Detroit Hamtramck plant. I mean, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, here I am back in Detroit freezing myself.
There you are.
It's cold out there.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. We got an interesting face here.
Seth, a new face, Ted.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Who are you, sir?
I am Seth Miersma. I am a senior editor at Autoblog, and I'm happy to be here.
And we're glad to have you.
Very glad to have you. Thanks. Yeah, no, we love Autoblog, and we've had some of your other compadres
Absolutely.
On here before,
yeah.
Seth. So.
Good to see you.
Good to have you.
Thanks so much.
But now we got to introduce our special guest for the show today, Bob Hegblum, the CEO of the Ram brand. Bob, great to have you here.
No, this is wonderful. I appreciate the opportunity. We'll try to heat things up in here. We know it's cold outside, but exciting week next week with the auto show kicking off. So we got some exciting stuff coming. And
in fact, we got one of your products here in the studio with us, the ProMaster City. And we got to talk about that. But let's talk about the Ram brand first, because, man, you guys are one of the biggest success stories.
Yeah, you got to be the happiest guy in Detroit, I think.
Well, I do walk around with a smile on my face. You know, it's a great time to be on the brand. It's a great time to be selling trucks. And you think about it, I've always said, you know, as kids, we grow up playing with trucks in the sandbox or out having a lot of fun. Well, I get to still do it every single day. And
you're still in the sandbox.
I still am in the sandbox. But, you know, what a great opportunity to get to go out and play with trucks every day, to work on these, and just bring the what customers are asking for to life. It's a lot of fun.
And it's clear that the customers are interested because your sales are up 32% in December, which is the 56th consecutive month Wow. of year-over-year sales gains.
It is. You know, we're sitting here, your 56 consecutive months, you think of that, it's nearly 5 years where we've continued to have this type of an approach. And, you know, it wasn't long ago. We sit back and we're fighting for everything, and you think about how long this 10 years going on. And we've had spikes in the marketplace before where you'll go out and launch a new product or you'll get some advantage. But to have it for nearly 5 years where we've sustained this growth, it's pretty exciting. So hopefully we can continue that going into 2015. And with the products that we have out in the marketplace, you know, our light-duty trucks, our heavy-duty trucks, delivering on what customers continue to ask for, you know, we're pretty confident we can continue.
How much of this is due to breaking Ram off as its own separate brand, and how much of it is just due to having some pretty good product?
Well, certainly having great product always helps. You know, I've grown up, I've been a product guy my whole life. That's what I like to focus on. That really helps. But the separation, what it's allowed not only us to do at Ram, if you look at what Dodge has been able to do as well, it's been fantastic. But when Mr. Marchione came up with this idea that we were going to separate, I know you were, you know, questioning that decision mm-hmm. at the time. I think part of the quote you said was, you know, I can't believe they're adding another brand when others are reducing. And what it allowed us to do from the RAM standpoint is truly focus on what the customers were asking for, not only on the retail side of the business, but also on the commercial side, where we could really focus on those needs of the customers and then deliver those attributes to them. And, you know, when we were together with Dodge, there was always a little bit of inner struggle there because Ram always wanted to be bold, powerful, and capable. You know, we're the truck brand, and the car guys had a different concept. And so when we did separate, and you can get a single voice with Sam Elliott, who, you know, is just incredible. You hear his voice, you recognize it, and now people recognize Ram with that voice. And it's really helped by having that, you know, separate identity.
You know, we were talking about these gains that you've made. Now, arguably, you're in one of the toughest segments in all of automotive. Okay, you've got Silverado, you've got F-150, and, you know, worthy competitors by any measure. How is it that the 1500 has been able to do so exceedingly well in this market space?
Well, the big thing I got back to, you know, listening to our customers, and the number one attribute they were looking for was fuel economy, and which is interesting. If you went back to the mid-90s, we went out, did research, asked customers, would you sacrifice any performance, capability for fuel economy? The answer was absolutely not. And then you fast forward to where the market is today and how things have developed. Fuel economy is extremely important. And bringing the first diesel to market and delivering 28 miles per gallon, which with a pickup truck with no sacrifices, you get all the capability you would expect out of a full-size truck, but delivering on 28 miles per gallon is phenomenal.
Well, first in the light-duty pickups, right?
Right.
Because you've had them in the heavy duties for years now.
Right.
In fact, you guys were the first ones with it in the heavy duty, weren't you?
Or well, you know, there were we'd have to go back and look, but I know we
Cummins diesel, though,
right.
that was a big shock when it came out. That's why I'm thinking it was the first of the diesels. Maybe
so,
I'm wrong on
that. Yeah, 1989. So it's been over 25 years. We've been with them. We've produced over 2 million units. So a relationship with Cummins has been great. But the 3-liter diesel that we brought into our light-duty truck, you know, there were some questions up front about a Cummins. This is our, it's a VM Motori engine. It's a 3-liter diesel. We mated it with our 8-speed transmission. And that's the big thing here. By having that range of gears where we could then take that power and take it throughout that range with that diesel engine, it allows us to get this great fuel economy. And the ride with our link coil suspension, everything that we've got from a feature and benefit, people who have not been in a pickup truck in a while are blown away. And one of the things that we've done a lot, so to get over that obstacle, because it is a challenging, it's the highest loyalty in any segment is pickup trucks. And so to overcome that is difficult. But we get out there, we bring the product to market, we get customers in the vehicle, and once they experience it, they'll buy it.
So who have you conquested from?
You know, if you look at the conquested defection, so who do we bring in versus who do we lose to and what that ratio is, we've essentially been taking it from everyone. Hmm. It wasn't the case not long ago, but we've been able to really move the needle with our product.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Yeah, take a drink of water there.
So I've got to ask, too, if the 3-liter and the 8-speed was sort of magic, a 2-liter diesel and a 9-speed might work really well together, too, right?
Well, I'll tell you.
In a smaller application, perhaps?
We're going to talk about ProMaster 6.
Yeah. We may as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting to bring that up. The 2-liter diesel, but it was mated with a manual. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever drove this product from our sister brand, the Fiat Professional Team, this is the Doblo in Europe, and they've had it out there. Over a million have been produced. That's the first time I ever drove this van was with that. So
oh, nice.
Fantastic
sure.
powertrain.
Sure.
So let's talk about this ProMaster City, a.k.a. Fiat Doblo. What led you guys to do it? Was it Ford coming out with the Transit Connect? And you went, oh, wait a minute, we can do that too? Or what led you to do this vehicle?
Well, part of it started with we wanted to develop that commercial side of our business. So a year ago, we launched the ProMaster, which is our Class 2 van.
The big one.
The big one. So we brought that to market. And when you look at the overall van segment, the Class 2 where that plays, it's about 70% of the mix. So, but we saw a big piece of the market with the ProMaster City or the Class 1. And at the time, there really was Transit Connect, and we had our Ram CV, which was we took our minivan platform, we adapted that product to the customer needs. So we went out to the NTEA show, talked to customers. How do you use the van? What do you look for? When you think about these things, it's a rolling billboard. There's a lot of space on the side. Advertise your company. They wanted the privacy panels. They wanted a solid load floor. So we brought that to market with the Ram CV. But they truly were looking for this type of a commercial-oriented product. The barn-style doors in the back that allow for easy access. And then if you have a ladder rack on the top or any other type of application, it really helps you in that scenario. So we went over there, we drove this, we saw that opportunity, we saw the Class 2 where the big piece is and this, and it fits into that whole commercial portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, you know, you were saying earlier that you've been a product guy your entire career, okay? And if we go back to when you began your career, the Detroit 3 all had commercial vans, but they were large rectangles, right?
Yeah.
And everybody had one, and that is what the van market looked like for the commercial, light commercial vehicles. What is it that you see is causing this change to this new design or this new architecture?
Well, first and foremost, you get down to cost of ownership. So those vans, we all remember them. We see them. There's still a few out there.
They were cheap.
Yeah, they were cheap.
Tooling was paid off, and I think the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah. Right. And not exactly complicated tooling since they were basically rectangles.
Right.
Old refrigerator tooling.
But, I mean, we can go back. You know what those vehicles are. You know, you knew the box, if you will. Big V8 engines. They weren't real fuel efficient. So now fast forward to where we are today. We bring ProMaster in. You know, it's a front-wheel drive application. Unheard of in this segment. So lower step-in height. The ingress egress is much easier to get in and out of. A delivery application that people love it. Think about if you're getting in and out of delivering packages all day long and you have a lower step-in height. I know which one I'd want to be getting in and out of. Mm-hmm. So a great opportunity. With front-wheel drive application, you have the maneuverability. The maneuverability of that big van is consistent with a midsize sedan. So you go into some of the big cities, L.A., Chicago, New York, even into Detroit, your big van markets where you do a lot of in-town city driving, that's a huge plus. And then the overall fuel economy on top of that, with our 3.6-liter Pentastar delivering on that efficiency versus that big V8, it's really transformed the marketplace. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, John, you've driven that. I've driven it. Seth, have you driven this yet? And
yep.
I mean, and It drives great, and I mean, and we did it on that obstacle course that you guys set up, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
How well this thing is able to handle through.
So we took the big one. Now you take a little smaller package, much more nimble. So you got to have fun on the obstacle course. So we put our 2.4 liter Tiger Shark engine.
So you put a bigger engine in for the U.S. market.
We changed from the diesel application, so we came to a gas configuration, and we mated that with an automatic transmission. And that's what dominates our market here. So we brought in our own powertrain. So the 2.4 liter with the 9-speed transmission. So once again, we talked about the gearing on the diesel. By putting the 9-speed with that, now you've got the performance out of the gate with that powertrain. You guys got to have fun with that. But you'll also have the capability when you have a load. So a lot of fun to drive. And then the other big change for the U.S. market was we changed the suspension. So an independent rear suspension. And it gives you an incredible ride. It gives you the lateral stability. So you could feel that when you were doing some of the driving. So great performance, a great ride and handling. And then for the applications, man, what a great vehicle. You're a caterer, you work in, call it the electronics field, and I think you're going to talk about that.
Consumer electronics show,
yeah,
right?
You know, the satellite guy who comes out doesn't have a lot of weight that he has to carry, per se. He can take this van, and it's a great application for what he's looking for.
So what's going to happen? You know, this segment didn't exist just a few years ago in the U.S. market. Now you guys have jumped in. Ford started it with the Transit Connect. Nissan's there with the NV200. Chevy's going to sell a version of that. Is this segment going to grow, or are you guys just going to slice this up into little itty-bitty pieces?
Well, you know, the great thing about this piece of the market is it was an area that was never tapped into before. So the alternatives you had were a small pickup, a full-size pickup, or a big van. So now, depending on your application, if you're a caterer or you're a florist and you don't have the need for big carrying capability requirements, and you're looking for a very nimble delivery type application, why do you need to buy those vehicles? So it's opened the door on a whole new segment, and that's what's really been interesting to watch. Now, take this, you know, a drywaller, great vehicle. You know, he carries around a few things. If he needs a ladder, he's got that. His tools of the trade, they're not real heavy. He can advertise on the side of the vehicle, and he shows up. It's a great package. So, and then for those that want to drive it as well with their family, so you still have 4 feet of room in that wagon behind that second row seat. You got a ton of room to carry stuff. But then you have the availability to carry 5 people. So even if it's a small work crew, depending on what you're doing, or your family, it's a great application.
But now, can you get it without the second row? So it's just cargo back there?
Yep. So we have 2 different configurations that this van will be offered in. You'll have the wagon or the cargo. So the cargo, you've got just pure space. Mm-hmm. And you can put a partition in if you want or not. We have all the various upfits, so the racks and the bins and the storage systems that are available. So all of that's available to the customer. But then we've heard, man, it's a great option. I have so much room if I do get the van with the seat. I still have 4 feet of storage. I can tumble that seat. Gives me more opportunity. But then if I need to carry someone, I can. So we give the customer the flexibility based on their needs. And when you look at it, what's really interesting is the walls are nearly vertical. So to put in any racks, bins, storage systems, it really gives you that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. And plus the people aspect there as
sure,
well.
Sure, you know. We have also got it in 2 different trim levels. So you can have a work type application with our standard entry level, or you can transition up to our mid-range, which will have a body-colored front-end fascia and equipment and more features.
And we'll get more info after this break.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Things that move, move better. Just talk to one of our scientists. They'll show you a special glue we've developed that bonds metal to plastic. And that makes the things you're trying to move lighter. The less weight, the less energy. And what you save can be used for speed, for efficiency, or just for fun. This is the human element at work. Dow.
Well, Bob, you've got new products that you're adding that have got to keep the momentum going. I got to believe that, you know, what would you say, Gary, 55 consecutive months?
56.
Mm. So January going to be 57, you think? How long can you keep this rolling?
Well, I'm going to just keep trying to do it month by month. And that's what we've focused on. Keep pushing, keep driving. We talked about going out, talking to our customers. You know, some of the different programs that we've connected to. We have our Ram Rodeo program. We'll go to over 500 rodeos a year, and we get down at the grassroots level, put these people into our products, and we'll continue to do these types of applications. And, you know, next week, hopefully, we'll get a number of people who can come out to the show, see some of the great things that we have to offer.
And we got a bunch of questions coming in here from the audience, but I'm dying to ask you about the Ram 700, this little, another Fiat-based product that you're selling in Mexico. You know, here Chevy's making all this headlines with the Colorado and GMC with the Canyon because they've got slightly smaller trucks. That Ram 700 is a considerably smaller truck. Any chance it might make its way north of the border?
You know, not at this time. Actually, that vehicle was introduced and it's been sold in Brazil, and they brought it up to Mexico, and they've sold it there, and they've done it in some of the Latin American countries. It's not homologated. It's not set up to come to the U.S. with all the requirements. Certainly, we've looked at it, and we'll continue to look at opportunities within that segment, but it gets difficult. You know, we had Dakota. It was a successful product that we had out there. But, you know, when you looked at that, it continued to get bigger and bigger through its life cycle. Mm-hmm. And
every car does.
Oh, it does.
Every vehicle ever in the history of this business has always gotten bigger.
Bigger, more capable. But if you went back to the 80s when that was launched, the midsize segment was actually a larger segment than full-size trucks. And then as these trucks continued to get bigger, they started to close the gap between full-size trucks. They got more capable. Same scenario. Fuel economy came down on one another, and the price point got closer. So four key areas that you look at that make a mid-size truck successful. Mm. And when you look at that, certainly we can make them smaller. We've got this application. You know, you can make them less capable. But when you start getting now into fuel economy, we've got a full-size Ram, delivers 9,200 pounds of towing, and your expectations on a smaller mid-size truck is you're going to get better fuel economy than what you deliver with your full-size.
So what do you think about the bet that GM has made then in the midsize? I mean, are you sort of, is there a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude based on those trucks? Because they've obviously gone in, you know, pretty big there, and they have that same issue that you're talking about. They're kind of on top of each other in terms of fuel economy and price when you get into the higher-level trims.
It certainly will be interesting, and it is something we'll watch and we'll look at. But when you look at that product, it's a big drug. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fuel economy was about a mile better than where we are gas to gas. So take a full-size truck versus the mid-size. So unless there's a big variance in the price point of the product, why wouldn't you buy a full-size? And that's what we've all struggled with. So it will be interesting to see this play out.
It's going to be an interesting year for a truck guy, huh?
Yeah. It's always interesting.
But, I mean, I think 2015 is going to be a little bit more than, say, 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2013 was a great year for us. We launched our light-duty and heavy-duty, Gary. So, but, no, it's, you know, the truck segment, you can't stand still. And that's the biggest thing that we all face, we all are up against, is we have to stay competitive. We have to continue to deliver innovation, products that meet the customer needs, and continue to move. If you're not, you're going to get run over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, real quick, we got a bunch of questions here.
Uh-oh.
Scott in Cleveland wants to know, will the high roof option for the Doblo be available on the ProMaster City?
Not at this time, but it is available in Europe. We've looked at it, so we'll get this launched, and it's always out there that we could bring to the U.S.
Here's an interesting one. JM1NB says, where is that? I lost my, that was right. JM1NB says, any challenges in getting the stability control to adapt to an unloaded versus max load top-heavy situation?
No, you know, certainly we have to work through those equations all the time, and it's even a greater challenge when you take a ProMaster, and which is much bigger, much taller. You've got that application, but yes, we work through that. We test them to ensure the safety of the customer.
Roman Koch wants to know, are those steel sides or whited out windows?
We've got all steel here on this one.
Yeah, and we got a question, a phoner here. Ben, let's bring that in.
Hi, guys. This is Youngblood, Cleveland, Ohio. Got a freebie for the ProMaster guy. Hey, instead of that second row that you have in there, let's put some stow-and-go seats out of your van. And you have much more room. Stow and go, second row. That's it. It's a winner. You can have that one. It's a freebie.
Oh, I love blog, guys.
Your format in your on your website. I'm very disenchanted with it. I think you had a whole bunch neater of a format before you changed to where you're at now. That's just my opinion. Have a good one. See you in Detroit. Bye.
Youngblood, thank you very much. I always love the ideas like that. The one thing you'll be able to see with this van is the seat does tumble. You know, well, it doesn't go into our tubs like we have with the minivans, which is something certainly we'll continue to look at. There is an alternative there where it does fold out of the way.
I think we've got another phone call here. Ben, let's bring that in.
Hi, this is Jeff Eischek from Albany, New York. My question for your guest is, how much have the CAFE rules driven the trend towards bigger and bigger pickups? You know, comparing a half-ton truck from the 1980s to today, and you can see what I mean. I believe the CAFE rules have some sort of ratio in terms of wheelbase to fuel economy and so forth, and I'm just wondering if that might influence why trucks seem to have gotten bigger. Thanks.
Good question.
No, it is.
Because it's the footprint, not the track and wheelbase.
Right. It is the footprint of the vehicle. What you were referring to, when you get into the capability, so the work factor, that's when you get into the heavy-duty trucks that are above 8,500 pounds. So that is separate. So that's a separate entity versus the light-duty. And whether you're generating credits or not, the two don't work together. They're independent.
Got it. And we'll make this the last question. Dr. Botox says, Ram puts a lot of cash on the hood these days. Who decides how big the incentive should be?
Well, certainly we're involved in that.
I would imagine as CEO of the brand, you've got some say.
a little bit. Yes, we're deeply involved in that. And then we look at it regionally as well. So we work with our local business centers around the country. You know, certainly you're going to look at what's going on from a competitive environment. You know, where are your inventory levels? And what's going on in the given markets? If there's a auto show going on where you're going to entice people to come in and get them a bonus. So all of those factor in, but yes, we play a heavy role in that decision making.
But are you guys more incentivized than the F-150 or Silverado or what?
No, and you know, John, you and I have talked about this and we talked about it earlier today. If you go back, you know, a number of years ago when times were very difficult in Detroit and in the auto industry, the incentive levels that were out there at that time were extremely high. And, you know, the industry has really come down. We've been very diligent to make sure that we don't go back to those days again.
Well, Bob, I can't wait to see how Ram does this year. I would think that adding vehicles like the ProMaster City, the ProMaster getting a full year of that, doubling production of your diesel in the light-duty Ram, sounds to me like it's going to be a decent year.
Mm-hmm. No, it's certainly something we're very excited about, bringing that, continuing to deliver on customer needs with given packages. Whether it's a lifestyle-oriented package, it's a commercial-oriented package, we want to make sure we offer what customers are asking for. So we've got all the fuel economy, if you will. We continue to drive that. Hopefully we'll have some enhancements. And then on top of that, we've got the capability. You know, 30,000 pounds with our heavy-duty trucks. It's a scary number, and we've talked about that. I mean, you put a trailer like that behind you, it's intimidating for most. But the truck delivers it, and it's a great tool, and the payload and the power that these provide. We're very, very happy with what we have in the market.
You know, I've just got to do a shout-out to the guys who do the interiors of your 1,500 vehicles, because we've been talking about capability, we've been talking about capacity, we've been talking about fuel economy, but you know, you get into those trucks, and I mean, right across the board in terms of the interiors, I mean, those guys are doing a sensational job, and they've got to be acknowledged for that.
No, our design team does a great job. We work very well that way. And how far these have come, you know, the average age of trucks is over 10 years. And you think about where trucks were at that time, what the fuel economy was, what the interiors were like. I mean, there's people out there that remember the vinyl seats, the vinyl flooring, the crank windows, and a three on a tree. And, you know, you step forward to what these vehicles offer today, whether it's the Uconnect system, four-corner air suspension, Wi-Fi connectivity. I mean, they have all the technology, the features that you would ever expect in a luxury premium-type application. And you have them in pickup trucks today. Mm-hmm.
And if you have a Laramie Longhorn, you can feel like an oil baron.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or you're right. Sitting in your
you
leather.
You may be one.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you might be one. Bob Hegblum, thanks so much for coming on Autoline After Hours. Thanks for bringing in a Ram Pro City Master with you, too. It's been great having you.
No, this has been wonderful. Thank you guys very much. Look forward to everyone. Hopefully they can get out to the show and see some of the great things that we have to offer.
Yeah. Good deal.
See you next week.
Thank you. We're going to take another quick commercial break, come back, talk about CES versus NAIAS, and we'll be back in just a minute for that.
A little chemistry goes a long way, especially when it comes to vehicle development. From enabling the use of alternate materials to withstanding extreme vehicle environments, Henkel's adhesive, sealants, and surface technologies provide solutions for every vehicle segment. Come see for yourself. Our Detroit area headquarters offers 12 research and development and testing laboratories with the ability to do full-range testing and validation on actual vehicle parts. Sign up to tour our labs at henkelna.com/tour.
So, Seth, you were at CES for a little... No, did you make it out there?
I was in Las Vegas, and I saw one press conference before the show started. I saw a Uconnect thing. I was out there with Chevy, but then I went to Go Drive Corvettes.
So. Z06 Corvette.
Z06 Corvettes, yeah.
How was that? Or is that embargoed? Can you tell?
No, not embargoed. The review is up. It's mind-blowing. It's easily the best Corvette that I've ever driven, for sure, and one of the very fastest cars that I've ever driven. Mm-hmm. So,
that's saying something.
Yeah, it really was amazing. And the thing is, it's easy to say. I've always enjoyed Corvettes. It's hard not to have a good time driving one, but it's never been a car that really got me in my enthusiast heart, and this one did. I mean, this one really was a lot more subtle than you'd expect, 650 horsepower.
Really? Because I would have thought that this is just one hairy beast.
It can be. The thing is that the drive mode select now has gotten, and the Magna Ride suspension has gotten so sophisticated that the steps between the eco mode is really the least aggressive, and then you go all the way up through the track mode and then various levels of traction control in the track mode. You would never drive the car in track mode on the street because it would beat you up and knock the fillings out of your teeth. But on the other hand, in the eco mode, it's almost so light it feels like you're driving. The steering is like an economy car almost. You can steer it with one hand with no problem. So the variation within the ride quality and the overall control of the vehicle is pretty amazing. Mm. So it tamps down that 650 horsepower a little bit, but still there when you need it.
Yeah. And when would that be?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, every day.
Yeah. Most in, 5 minutes every day.
When the world is right, it's an everyday need.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But you spent a lot of time at CES. You
I
talked
did.
To a lot of executives.
I did.
And people can go online and see them.
Yeah,
you're talking
to, you can go to our website, autoline.tv, see all the different, let's see, Ford, FCA, BMW, and now I'm blanking out on who else we talked to there. But no, it's becoming more and more of an automotive-like show. I want to say there were 10 or 11 car companies exhibiting there. There must have been easily two dozen automotive suppliers, some with gigantic displays. And I got to tell you, it was jam-packed there. Mm-hmm. The Mercedes stand, because they made a big thing, we'll get into that in a second with their autonomous car. The Mercedes stand was absolutely as jam-packed as the LG or the Sony stands in the show. So, I mean, these tech heads are definitely into cars. Anybody who had any kind of a vehicle in their display, it was mobbed.
But how much of that do you think is just this phenomenon of, gee, how unusual that is? I mean, that you know, you're usually going to CES to see TV sets and computers and gaming systems, and then suddenly, wait, there's a Mercedes. There's an Audi.
Yeah, well, two things. You know, cars are getting much more sophisticated with infotainment, all this talk of connectivity, not just, you know, pairing your phone, but vehicles talking to each other in an infrastructure, having autonomous cars. The technology that goes into that, which, by the way, now frees you up to do whatever the hell you want to do inside the car because you don't have to drive. So now the tech industry, Silicon Valley and especially, has rediscovered the auto industry. Mm-hmm. And the auto industry likes to go to CES because it helps brand themselves in a different way. Like now they're tech companies, mm-hmm. not just
sure.
metal bangers making cars.
Right. Well, Mark Fields told you that they were there 8 years ago for the first time, I think
right.
it was. And
right.
that
wow.
he made a...
He talked about the first Sync application.
Right. Now they're on Sync 3.
Sync 3. And but what I find interesting is that Mercedes chose to go to CES to introduce its autonomous car, not to the Detroit show, which is coming up next week. I think this could be a threat to the Detroit show, and not just the Detroit show, by the way, but it's, you know, 1 week after. They better figure out how they're going to respond to this, because BMW was showing its newest laser headlamp technology. Mm-hmm. Audi was showing their latest autonomous car that's there as well. You know, FCA was there. Seth, you talked about OnStar doing stuff.
Yeah. I think especially you look at things like the New York show a couple of years ago, Honda brought the Honda VAC in the Odyssey, right? Mm-hmm. That was one of the biggest stories. That story clicked for our site bigger than just about anything else out of that show.
A stupid vacuum cleaner
in the back of your van. And one of the reasons why it was because it was out of sync with the rest of the show. So it was able to cut through the noise, which was, you know, noise in this case is the stuff that we all love, the cars. So at CES, I think what you're seeing is the reverse is true. The Mercedes, you know, was mobbed it got, I'm sure, an amazing response on, you know, big tech sites because they're allowed to talk about something that they're not usually allowed to talk about, which is really interesting for them as a thing to do 1 week a year and for the readers to read about for 1 week a year. So I think right now you're still in a position where Mercedes and Audi and Ford are going to get a lot of bang for their buck when they're at CES. And it'll be interesting for me to see how that carries on 10 years from now. You know,
right.
Does it level load a little bit or does it just get bigger?
Well, you know, you might, you know, thinking of Las Vegas and thinking of big shows, I mean, mm-hmm. SEMA and the
oh,
car
sure.
companies have increased their visibility there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you've gone to where, you know, the Ford stand probably at SEMA is as big as, if not bigger than, they have in Detroit. I mean, it's just phenomenal number of cars there. So maybe this shift where they can get more attention
mm-hmm.
is something that they'll be looking at. But so what impressed you?
What impressed me about the CES show? Well, you know, everybody says, oh, you got to go to CES. Oh, it's, you know, the vision of technology. The future is there. I'm here to tell you, there's a lot of junk at that show, a lot of knick-knack
right.
crap, you know, speaker grills. I mean, it almost looks like SEMA in certain areas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of junk, and the rest of it seemed to be just everybody's variation of a flat screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 4K, OLED, you know, curved this, and I wasn't that impressed by the show from a technology standpoint. So I think it's overblown. Maybe the tech field has sort of hit a plateau for the moment, that there really isn't anything new. They're trying to come up with more resolution in their flat screens,
mm-hmm.
which look awfully damn good today anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's one of the reasons why the automotive part of the show garnered so much
mm-hmm.
so much attention, is that I'm sure the tech crowd looks around and goes, man, I don't see anything new here. Ooh, look at that Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, let's
right.
go over there and take a look at that. So that's my impression of CES. It's cool, and I'm not trying to put it down, but it's not this great vision of the future of
mm-hmm.
technology that everybody tries to paint it as.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I was wondering about one thing. So LG, the appliance manufacturer, introduced at CES this year a washing machine that has an auxiliary washing machine, okay? So you have the main washing machine, and you open this thing, and there's another washing machine. Okay. I have to ask you guys whether it isn't the case where automakers, as they begin to laden their vehicles with technology,
mm-hmm.
aren't getting a little bit like adding this additional washing machine just so you can say, I got this washing machine.
No, yeah. Look, Seth already said it. You
right.
put a vacuum cleaner in,
yeah.
you grab all the headlines.
It's a big deal. Well, and you've got to remember, too, I think that sometimes, I know that I do, we get focused on things like, as car guys, things like horsepower and design and things that you can sort of touch and feel and experience in a car. I think that for a lot of people who don't care about that stuff, the extra washing machine in the car, as it were, is more exciting or more impactful on a day-to-day basis, too.
Mm-hmm.
So how they're able to use voice control to get into their head unit, essentially, is a really big deal for people who don't care about ever driving around a racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
So I, some of that plays into, I think, what consumers really want. But yeah, and some of it is just show stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have a showstopper.
Think about it. You know, Mercedes showed this autonomous car with the seats facing each other.
Swivel and go?
Swivel and go. Yeah, there you go. It's true. The door trim panel, the interior panels were all screens, video screens built into it. Not like they just slapped a screen on. It was integrated into it. And so who knows? In the future, if you don't have to drive the car, I can see a lot. Maybe there will be washing machines in cars
yeah,
in
right.
the future, or vans, certainly. So who knows where it's going to go?
Mm-hmm. So did you come back from Las Vegas saying autonomy is the future?
No, I said that in 1987.
It still is.
Okay, so did you come back from Las Vegas and feel more validated from your observation in 1987?
I think autonomy will be autonomous cars out before this decade is out. They may be in controlled situations like gated communities, college campuses, hospital campuses, that sort of thing, retirement communities. But it's common. It's absolutely common. I've been amazed at how fast the technology has accelerated in the last 10 years, especially in the last 5 years. The progress the industry has made is just astonishing. The next 5 years will be even more so.
Well, the Boston Consulting Group just came out with a study that said they think it will be a $42 billion market by 2025, and that by 2035, a quarter of all the cars sold worldwide are autonomous.
Well,
it's aggressive.
With that thought, hold that thought. We're going to take another quick commercial break, and we'll come back and talk about more things here.
The Firestone Destination LE2. Tough enough to handle anything the road throws at you.
Oops.
And you throw at it. Durable, dependable Firestone tires. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
So, should we get back to autonomous cars or...
I mean, one of the things, and, you know, you talked to Mark Fields, and you know, I thought what Ford was talking about, the 25 experiments they've been running around the world, were sort of interesting, and this sort of gets to your point of people with 650 horsepower vehicles and whether they're driving them. So I started looking at the 25 experiments that Ford ran and came to the conclusion that a large majority of them have to do with parking. Okay, so here it is. We're all interested in driving and capability, and it's parking.
Yeah.
That's what people really, really need to have when they're living in cities, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And the access of doing that. And there was a lot of car sharing that the Ford's talking about. Van sharing. I mean, you use an app and you call a van that's going to come to your house and pick you up and take you somewhere. So it isn't, you know, being able to put it in track mode or you know, deciding. It's like basically it seems to be they see a future where, you know, you may have to go to a track in order to drive a car 60 miles an hour.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the parking thing is really interesting because that is something that is high on everybody's list, a lot of people's list of being intimidating, an intimidating thing to do in a car.
Frustrating.
Yeah. Frustrating, yeah. And so that's, you know, they're approaching an actual problem that consumers have, and that really is kind of the first step into autonomy is, you know, we've had cars for a long time now that can parallel park themselves, mm-hmm. you know, and that's sort of getting better and better, addressing a real problem that's there, as opposed to the bigger issue of how do we get everybody into these pods that are moving us back and forth that
right.
are safe and fuel efficient mm-hmm. and we don't have to...
Right.
But what I'm reading into the Ford announcement is they're really concerned about this mobility services thing, where I may not buy a car in the future. I'll buy the use of a car mm-hmm. when I need it. And, you know, when you start having a whole bunch of people do that sort of thing, instead of having a car parked 22 hours a day, if it's used 22 hours a day by multiple people, which, by the way, is cheaper than owning one, boy, what does that do to you as a car company? So you better figure out how you are going to be providing these services, not just the vehicles used by the service companies. You better figure out how you're going to reinvent yourself as a car company. That's what I'm reading into what Ford's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was actually very impressed by what they announced. In fact, I thought it was more significant than the Mercedes autonomous car, which is really cool and all that. And Ford said, yeah, what we're talking about here will incorporate autonomous cars. But they're looking at this whole big area of mobility.
Right, you know, and it seems to me that you know, they're doing, you know, Ford is doing what Chrysler is doing, what General Motors is doing, and what Honda is doing, and Toyota, everybody's doing, everybody's adding sensors, everybody's adding processing capacity, everybody's adding this for levels of autonomy. But, you know, I think it gets back to what you're saying about, you know, consumers have very real needs. And, you know, the expense of owning a car, if you've got, you know, payments for college or housing or eating or clubbing or your iPhone, suddenly you maybe want to share a car with somebody. And you know, Fields rolled out in his keynote that 34% of people say that they would allow their car to be rented by a stranger from them.
Wow.
34%!
Yeah.
I mean, that's astonishing. And it gets back to your point. Okay, so if you buy a car, and then I get it from you for a few hours a day, and then Seth gets it from me for a few hours a day, well, suddenly that takes two cars out of the equation.
Exactly.
And then you just multiply that.
Exactly. Look, what Zipcar and Relay Rides will say is that every car that gets shared pulls 15 other cars off the road.
Wow.
So as you see, as these car sharing and even ride sharing concepts catch on, it's a exponential reduction in the need for cars. And that's why I think Ford went, whoa, doggy, we better be way ahead of the curve on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're also doing a thing that's interesting, and it ties into the sharing economy too, which is they're really working on tackling big data problems. So they're working on finding out what information that we have to offer that can help them provide, in theory, a better product, be it a shared product or an individual one. But they're also, I think they're really tackling or working around the privacy concerns that come along with that too. So we're all everybody is concerned with the idea of a big company having their identity, mm-hmm. but when it's a product that's good enough to give that up, like your iPhone or your BlackBerry, whatever it is, mm-hmm. we tend not to care about it. So I think that they know that there's a balance to be struck when it comes to vehicles, how we're using them and how they're following us using them, but they're looking for that secret sauce right now too.
Right. Well, we're all very happy that we have Google Maps on our
right,
phones,
absolutely.
And we just think, wow, this is great. It's free. I just downloaded it, and Google isn't just giving that to us.
Right.
I mean, Google is taking our information, where we are, and so those little red lines when there's a traffic jam. Wonder where that comes from.
Yeah.
That comes from a whole bunch of iPhones that are just sitting there, or Android phones that are not moving. Oh, that's how Google knows.
Right.
So you don't want to think about that, but like when Mr. Farley, who was at probably CES last year, and I think he's probably in Europe right now, made that comment earlier. That would have been last year now,
right.
About, we know where you are and we know what you're doing.
Yeah, they had to backtrack off that mighty quick.
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, a topic I know you wanted to raise tonight. All these car companies moving their headquarters.
Yeah, what's the deal? So we have Mercedes, which is essentially moving out of New York City. I mean, New Jersey, but I mean, it's just right across the river. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for all practical purposes, it's going down to Atlanta. PSA is moving out of their headquarters in Paris and moving to the suburbs. It sounds very interesting to think about this in the context of, especially in the case of Mercedes, moving to Atlanta from New York. And they didn't say a word about, hipness or coolness or
tax breaks and cost of operation.
Not being a car company and, we're a luxury brands maker that, So I just look at it from the point of view of, so didn't they get the memo from Cadillac? I mean, they're supposed to stay there?
For Mercedes, the Mercedes move to me makes more sense insofar as they're closer to their base of operations, they're moving to a city that's cheaper, they're probably getting some pretty amazing tax breaks.
And on a night where it's 5 degrees outside right now, they're getting out of the cold weather.
There is that, too. And they didn't have the...
Yeah, but go to Hotlanta in July.
Well, amen.
I think that their problems maybe are different than Cadillac's problems, right? So I think that the move, for better or for worse, of Cadillac to Manhattan solves a different perceived problem, which is one of image and one of separation, whereas the Mercedes seems very practical. It's easier for me to understand anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know if I'm reading that right or wrong, but...
Well, it's so interesting, Nissan kind of, I guess Ford PAG started it, right?
Yeah, by going to Irvine.
By going to Irvine, that didn't work out. Now Nissan has moved out of Southern California. Toyota's about to move out of Southern California. Cadillac's going to New York. Mercedes to Atlanta. PSA out of Paris. Boy, who's next? It's crazy. I've never seen so much musical chairs on the part of car companies.
Yeah.
Ever.
But, it's... I just wonder, you're saying it's very practical. I wonder, can you imagine frugality being an issue with Mercedes? I mean, that just seems insane to me.
It's a good point.
I mean, how much did this car conceivably cost that you saw at those screens that are on every single door?
$400,000 is the autonomous car, I'm sure.
It's sort of interesting what's going on.
Speaking of Cadillac, Seth, what do you make of them cutting the price of the CTS?
It doesn't speak volumes for the CTS. I don't know. It's interesting. Because I think that it's a really good car, and I think that it's a competitive car. And honestly, if you'd looked at it, price Price against the competition and trim for trim, it didn't seem out of whack. As long as you buy that Cadillac is at the same level as the other premium makers. And I don't know if they're really seeing a response to that product or if they're seeing a response to that idea of brand, but clearly they're seeing a response that's not what they hope to have.
So basically what you're saying is that if you did a spreadsheet and you compared it to a BMW or you compared it to whatever, that the CTS would match up.
In line, yeah. I mean, you know, plus and minus, yeah.
But pretty much.
Yeah, in some places. But really, they're in line with the Audi BMW competitive set, for
right.
sure.
Right. So then it comes down to this thing of, okay, then there's this extra fee tagged on for prestige.
Yeah, the sits in my driveway fee. Uh-huh. You know, how much is that actually worth? And can Cadillac charge as much as Mercedes can charge for it?
You know, but it sort of surprised me that they're doing that to the CTS, because I was looking, the CTS is down 3.8%. The ATS is down 22%. Why wouldn't you put money on the hood of that?
One at a time, Gary. One at a time. I'm sure next week we're going to hear about the price cut on the ATS.
XTS down 25%. However, one of my favorite cars, which makes me one of maybe, we're going to do the math here very quickly, 1,316 people, the ELR up 458%. Last year they sold six. Well, no, actually it was, well, they haven't sold very many.
Yeah, well, that one, they probably got to cut the price about $20,000 or $30,000.
Yeah, right.
If they want to sell.
But this gets back to this whole question of, okay, we're going to move to New York, we're going to be cool, we're going to be hip, we're going to start selling these things differently, we're not going to push them out the door, and oh, by the way, but here's $3,000 to take this CTS. So haven't they already backtracked on what they were saying they weren't going to do?
Well, because Johan said he wasn't going to cut prices.
Right.
I think what happened is reality slapped him in the face, and the dealer said, hey, dude, yeah. We're dying.
Yeah.
Dying. You know what dying means? We're dying. You got to do something immediately. That's what I think happened.
Mm-hmm.
The upside is it's going to be a great value.
Oh, we got a phone call.
Oh, Ben, let's bring in the phone call.
Hey, guys. It's Jonathan out in Jersey.
All right.
Fabulous show. Cool Ram trucks. Nice to hear about CES show. But I want to hear Seth go into more depth about driving the A8 Z06 on the track and what it was like. Was it intuitive? Is it downshifted and upshifted on its own? Because I read his article and he said that the paddles really weren't doing it for him, but he said the car was awesome. So if you can go into that in a little greater depth, all
sure.
Let's call that, guys. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks,
sure.
Jonathan. Yeah.
The 8AT... So you can get a Z07 package on the Z06, which is the extra aero, bigger tires. The tires are critical, carbon ceramic brakes. That version of the car with the AAT is the secret sauce for the racetrack. It's the shift logic is so fast. Leaving the car in D is... It's perfect. It seems almost as quick as a DCT. Certainly, when
they claim it's faster.
Yeah, when you're not shifting on your own, which you can get a little bit of lag. And I should explain, the lag isn't, if you were just driving down the road and shifting up and down with the paddles, you'd be just fine. But when you're trying to execute sort of track speed downshifts, you'll get a little bit of a bump or a little bit more lag than you'd probably expect.
Is that rev matching or what's causing the delay?
I don't know. It might be the rev matching. I think it feels like the programming is just a little bit off. Or you're asking the transmission to do something that it's not.
Did you ask them about it?
Not quite ready. No, actually, they were basically heaped on with praise, but they were a little bit defensive about the action of the paddles on the 8AT.
So did you just drive it in D and see how it performed?
I drove it in both, but mostly I drove it in D after I had done a couple of laps shifting for myself with the paddles.
And you found the D to be
far better, far quicker. And it could be because I was making wrong decisions, but the decisions that I was making weren't being responded to with the same quickness as the computer when I let the computer do it for itself. Mm-hmm. But that was far and away the fastest laps that I turned on that admittedly short track. It was about 1.5 miles, 1.6. Way better.
So
it was the best car.
Is the future going to be automatic transmissions? I mean, just completely automatic transmissions and the paddle shifters would be like our little toes. I mean, there, but not all that useful.
I mean, because I think that if you still, I think that the benefit is if you're a driving enthusiast and you want to be out on a canyon road or, you know, your favorite river road, it's still fun to shift up and down through the gears. Or if you're on the highway and you want to make a pass, it's fun to shift up and down the gears. Whether or not it's the best thing to do, the fastest thing to do, I think is a completely different question. But why do we still want to buy manual transmissions? They're clearly inferior in every mechanical way to DCTs and the best new automatic transmissions, but we still want them.
Manual transmissions, little toes. I mean, they're both.
Yeah, useless, but nice
but I mean,
to
but
have.
they're also decreasing in overall numbers.
Oh, right, right.
So,
I don't know. It's hard to say what is actually going to end up winning out in the end. All I can say, I mean, this is definitely one of the very best automatic transmissions that I've driven, and I've been in the standard C7 and in the Z06 now with it, and. Again, like its programming seems to be just spot on.
Well, you know, we always like manuals because it's fun to be able to master a machine.
Sure.
You know, and especially if you're into heel and toe shifting, that takes a little bit of skill that most people can't deal with. And there's a pleasure in being able to do that and doing it competently. Mm-hmm. But to your point, the automatics today are so damn good.
Right.
Yeah, I just got a GTI today, and I was with a manual transmission, and it's always good fun to have that, right? And but yesterday when I was driving downtown to Hamtramck and was stuck on 94 in a traffic jam, boy, was I glad I didn't have that car.
Well, that's the downside, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't want a manual in stop and go traffic. It's not as fun. It's much better to have an automatic thing.
Although I've got to say that the 7-speed manual, too, I would still, if I was buying that car today, that would be the car that I'd buy. Not just because I like manual transmissions, but that one is a peach. You've got the rev matching feature, so if you really are trying to go fast, you still have the computers helping you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And
you got a big left calf muscle?
You don't need it. I mean, the clutch is not light, but it's not punishing either. Mm-hmm. So,
well, good question, Jonathan. Thanks for phoning that one in. But look, we're at the top of the hour. We ought to wrap up.
Wow, that went fast.
I know, that went very quick. Mm-hmm. Good show. Hey, good shows always go fast. But we're not going to be here next week, right? No.
I don't know.
Are we? I don't. No, okay.
Ben, we're not going to be here next week.
The voice of God, a.k.a. Ben, just came in. No, because of the Detroit Auto Show and everything going on. So not next week. 2 weeks from now.
All right.
I'll see you again.
It'll still be this year.
Yes, it'll still be this year. Yes, it will.
All right.
So, Seth, thanks. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll have you back.
Appreciate it. Cool. Good to know.
And want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Henkel, excellence is our passion.
Visit our website, AutoLine.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at AutoLine.tv.